Who are you calling a nice girl?
Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Not So Nice Girl. I am your host and recovering nice girl, Natalie Volpicelli. And as promised, I am joined again by my dear cousin, Sarah Prismark. And we talked about a lot of things after our last record of what we kind of wanted this part two to be. But a theme that kept coming up was various different relationships in very different lights, whether that's romantic, friendships, at work, whatever it is, a lot of run-ins with people who display narcissistic tendencies. So we talked last episode about listening to your intuition and understanding your needs and vocalizing your needs to not kind of fall into those nice girl behaviors. But that's not always as easy. Well, it's not easy in general, but it's especially not easy when you're dealing with these types of personalities, particularly because people who are empathetic, people who are people pleasers, people who maybe try to dull their intuitions are the exact prey for these types of people. So we're going to share some of our experiences while also diving into the nitty-gritty of what it means. And hopefully, if you guys relate to any of these, you'll kind of get some courage to maybe reevaluate some of your relationships. So I'll start with a disclaimer first that there is full-blown narcissistic personality disorder, which is a personality disorder. That means nurture and nature influences everything, but it's a bit more nurture than it is nature. It's a bit less of the cognitive brain affecting these behaviors. On that side, that's more sociopath, antisocial disorder, where it's a bit more the mental waves and how your brain is functioning. Whereas narcissist personality disorders, as any personality disorder, is much more in the environment around them. Has to do with some temperament, but definitely more about their environment. So they use their environment to continue to feed their narcissistic tendencies. And we are not going to be diagnosing anyone we are talking about. We are simply just explaining maybe some narcissistic tendencies that we've noticed have affected us personally. So with that huge intro, I want to turn it over to Sarah to maybe start to explain. You touched on it briefly in the first part, which if you haven't listened, go listen so that you know how to listen to your intuition. And then Sarah can go into a little bit more detail about specifically maybe start off with your ex that you discussed in the first episode.
Yeah. So when I was going through a lot of this like self-discovery in like stopping drinking and getting sober, I obviously did, you know, a lot of therapy. And it also came ahead with, you know, a few different people in my life. And I was kind of used to this like outward narcissistic, very blame-oriented behavior.
I think the stereotype that we think when we think narcissism.
Yeah, I think when you see all like the TikToks and the TV shows and everything like that, it's very cut and dry. It's like vicious, it's mean, you know, it starts with mean and then it gets into blaming. I think there's like a famous quote, nobody gets more upset than a narcissist being accused of something that they definitely did. And that was really, you know, prominent in what I was going through. And so my therapist at that point was like, listen, when this person is mean and they're outwardly upset or, you know, triggering you, you know, look for the insecurities in what they're saying. You know, they would say things like, wow, you only got this because I did this, you know, very clear, like mean shit. And so you would look at for the insecurities of like why that person was saying what they were saying. And then it wasn't until I had joined a kind of like breakup boot camp that I was discovering that there is another type of narcissism that I had experienced outside of romantic life in workplaces and friendships. And I don't know what the term is for it, so I don't want to create one.
Truthfully, in a lot of my research, so kind of to take a step back, there's hallmarks of narcissism, and you have to have five of the traits to be characterized. So like any disorder, it's a spectrum. I mean, so I think there's obviously this grandiose sense of self-importance, and it's kind of how they just present these behaviors. And I think like what you said, we always saw it and were shown it in this very extroverted, in-your-face way. But there's ways to present these concepts that are a little bit sneakier. Mm-hmm. And what people don't realize is that's the trick of a narcissist.
Yeah. I mean, so maybe we'll go, if it's extrovert, maybe we'll go with introverted-like tendency narcissism.
Yes. It's more like if one narcissist is like a big roaring dragon, mm-hmm. and this is like the snake or the fox.
Yeah, like definitely. Definitely. And so, like, you know, I had realized with this therapist that I had only been noticing the extroverted, the loud, the dragon, narcissistic behaviors in my life, and not the snake-like ones. And when I was telling her about day-to-day situations, you know, with a certain colleague or with somebody I was involved with at the time, she was like, these are kind of the same people, Sarah, you know? And I was dealing with situations where, you know, I would make a booking decision in work, and this person would try to convince me that the location that I booked wasn't actually a real place that existed. And what I realized later was it was that they were maybe insecure that they didn't think of it first. And it drove me nuts, because then all of a sudden I was actually Googling this place to make sure that it existed when I had paid for it. I had the booking confirmation, and, you know, I had seen it on television, but it was in my brain. Or there would be.
And again, it's those people pleasers that they know are going to question. They're already questioning themselves, and that's who they pick.
Yeah. And then there would be a situation where, you know, maybe I had found out that this person didn't tell me something or did something and, you know, we didn't discuss it first or something like that. And I wouldn't find out until months later. And naturally, I would be a little upset. And this person's response was, well, this is why I didn't tell you, because this is the response I would get.
That flip. And
the flip. And then all of a sudden, the conversation wasn't about what sparked this conversation in its entirety. It was about my reaction to it, not what actually started this. And, you know, and then I'd get in my head and I'd be like, wow, maybe I'm a raging bitch. Maybe I didn't react this way. I didn't react in the right way. Maybe I need to be kinder, be more understanding. But when in reality, what was happening was actually a little manipulative. And then it would be, I will be very honest and say, manipulative on both parts, because then I would tailor certain reactions to try to get certain answers. And it just became unhealthy.
Well, it's also a response to, I wouldn't see it as manipulative on your end. I think it's almost like a survival tactic of a lot of times people describe narcissists as having to walk on eggshells. And I think that can be phrased for a lot of different people, but for narcissists, it's because you don't necessarily know what's going to get used against you next.
Yeah.
And you almost, it's kind of like you can't beat them, join them.
Exactly.
So you almost think that you have to join in on their game in order to elicit a response, when in actuality, most of the time, that's exactly what they're wanting. They're wanting a reaction from you.
Yeah.
Because a reaction gives them validation.
Or even there's, you know, in conversations, there could be times where they would say, well, you said this, and they would take out, you know, like two or three words of something that I had said, and that was what they had fixated on, and it's the roots of their argument.
But it's intentional. It's intentional why they fixate on that and not the rest.
And then I would say, okay, well, then you said this. And they would be like, oh, come on, you can't hyperfixate on one little thing. And I thought they were right. And so that's kind of a common tendency with the different types of personalities that I was, I don't want to say surrounding myself with, because a lot of these people I really loved dearly and still do. But I
think that's an important distinction.
Yeah. It's because people that I was not prepared or didn't have the tools to really approach in a healthy way and keep our relationship in a certain bandwidth and just let it live there.
Yes.
So, yeah. So like these people, you know, I still love and I'll love for the rest of my life. I just wasn't built with the tools to help myself understand where they were coming from, and that maybe they didn't know any better of how to communicate. And so I don't want to, like, people listening to this to think that if they have these people, types of people in their lives, it's a bad thing or they're bad people. I think that everybody across the board just needs to have a little bit more patience with themselves in why this person's in your life and the role they have in your life, and patience maybe a little bit with them in why they are the way that they are. And maybe that's the only way that they know how to communicate or, you know, engage in certain types of tension.
Well, and I think that's the disclaimer too, is again, a lot of what we're going to talk about, and I'll maybe take a step back to explain really what is narcissistic personality disorder. What are the hallmarks? And I think what you'll find when you're going through them is a lot of what you were explaining and what we'll continue to explain. You can see one or two of these in people. That doesn't mean they're a full-blown narcissist. However, it's similar with any other mental disorder or personality disorder, that doesn't make the actions any less harmful to the people that they're impacting. And I think for this audience who are people pleasers, we internalize where it's not just, we take it one step forward from what are those insecurities? Because it's well documented that most narcissistic people or people who have narcissistic tendencies tend to have severe, severe insecurities and dissatisfaction with self, which is why they present the exact opposite. And while it's good to always understand they might be going through something, they might have insecurities, I think people often let that be an excuse, and it's not an excuse to hurt people. You can have insecurities. We all have insecurities. I could sit here for hours and list them if I really wanted to. I'm not going to, but you know, we all have insecurities. We all have things going on. That's just part of life. And it's very important to pinpoint these insecurities to give reason to what's occurring, so that you take the responsibility off of yourself and then stop. Because I think with a lot of people pleasers, a lot of nice girls, is we take the next step where we go, well, now we feel guilty that we're not helping them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's not our job.
Yeah. And I think there's something to be said where you don't necessarily have to help that person in a tangible sense. You don't need to be that person's shoulder. You don't need to be that person's, you know, bank or whatever. But you can also, setting a boundary with that person can also be helpful.
Very helpful.
Can help them. You know, it doesn't need to be this kind of like, if you don't fix this shit, I'm not going to be in your life, X, Y, Z. It can just be a very vulnerable, listen, what's happening right now is not healthy and I'm going to take a step back. And
not even a direct thing, but again, remembering, okay, so I keep saying that I'm going to walk us through this and I keep going in circles. But so the hallmarks of narcissistic personality disorder, and again, this is a spectrum. This is, nothing is really cut and dry. It's first this grandiose sense of self-importance. And so that can present itself in so many ways. That can be the like Brads and Chads that you think of where they're like, oh, I'm the best. It can also just be someone who thinks they are superior because of who they are without actually earning any of those merits. They just think because of who they are, they've already, you know, it's this, again, it's twisted in with entitlement and this unreasonable expectation that they should be treated differently for no reason, really, just for existing. This idea that they're special, and more specifically, that they can only associate with other special people deemed, and it's all arbitrary. And so that leads a lot of them to be very exclusive. Very, very exclusive. And then that also kind of goes into this defensiveness. So they, you know, if you were to tell them you're really exclusive, you're kind of mean to my new friend that I brought over. Immediate defense. This flipping. They flip things on you. It's, again, this self-importance, this entitlement, and this hypocritical nature that you do everything wrong and they can't do anything wrong.
Shit, I'm like, you know what? Maybe I do know a few more people that have these types of things than I thought I did.
And what's scary is there's like 9 or 10 of these and you only need 5. So then continuing, I think a lot of people think lacks empathy. But most narcissists do what we call performative empathy or transactional empathy. So they won't just be, it's almost like love bombing, which they also do love bombing, where they go so out of their way to be empathetic or to outwardly seem like they are empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not actually helping. They're not actually empathetic. They're not actually listening to you, but they'll do these grand gestures of empathy, or they'll, you know, be very keen on someone else's checking in on you. Oh yeah, I'm going to check in on her too and let everyone know that I'm helping someone who's sick. Things like that. They don't necessarily think of it themselves, but it's almost like a copycat game. And with this kind of trait is this unwilling to identify with the needs of others. So they may do performative empathy, but they're not actually willing to sit and listen and understand fully and deeply what someone else is going through. That's that they don't feel the need for that. And I think that's a piece that we overlook because we do that so naturally. We, especially people pleasers, we are more than willing, almost too willing to sit in the needs of others. And it's not just empathy and what you think about. It's also, do they take other people's needs into account ever? And this one's dicey because there's some people that they're not narcissists, but they just are clueless. So you don't know. This one I really love is usually envious of other people and often use projection on those specific people. So if they're envious of something that you have, say you have a boyfriend and they really want a boyfriend, they will often project and get mad at you specifically and say, you only spend time with your boyfriend. You don't care about me. You hate me.
That's an interesting one. Yeah.
And they're very pinpointed. And then this last one is this preoccupation with fantasies. So perfect love, perfect beauty, having success, having power, all of that stuff, these big ideas they're obsessed with, which are never following through. You never have the perfect love. You never have the perfect career. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be perfectly beautiful. Like,
we're the perfect family. Yeah.
Or the perfect family, the smartest person. You want that, but that's not ever, that sounds negative, but that's just, these idealistic things are idealistic for a reason. So they're constantly mad with themselves that they're not there. And again, pinpoint and target other people to either give them validation surrounding that part or to tear them down to build themselves up.
And blame them for putting them in that situation when in
it's
reality.
It's never their fault.
Yeah.
Never their fault. If the perfect love goes away, like they'll choose words like, we were so perfect and you ruined it.
Mm-hmm.
Or like, don't throw away what this perfect relationship, because like we're the perfect image.
Mm-hmm.
We're the ideal. And that doesn't mean anything. Like, you look like Barbie and Ken or whatever. Like, okay. That doesn't mean anything. But they're so fixated and so obsessed with that ideal and they won't let go of it. And they'll blame you if they aren't getting it. It's never their fault.
And I have definitely a situation like that in my life currently. And what works for me, and it might not work for other people, but what works for me is this approach that's just kind of like keeping that relationship, my relationship with that person, and then this romantic relationship that this person has with their other significant other in a box. And it's kind of like this weird TV show that comes on that I just kind of watch in the background and I'm not really paying full attention to. And it took a long way to get there. You know, I took a lot of things personally. Once I kind of just kept it in this little tiny box and never let their drama or my drama kind of seep into each other, it's been very freeing for myself. It hasn't necessarily solved anything, but it's kind of let a little pressure out of the balloon that was kind of causing this implosion. And I think what's really key about what you said too is that the blame aspect of it is I think we as nice girls, we as maybe just women and people in general, find ways to interpret what they're saying that put us in that position. So they might literally not be very obvious and be like, I blame you for XYZ. You did this. You said XYZ. But I've been in situations where it's been like, well, it couldn't work because I felt I had to choose. And in my mind, I'm like, did I ask you to choose? Wait, what? No, I didn't. So it was kind of like a mental mind fuck. And I, instead of finding, you know, the reason to reply back and, you know, scream and yell, I tapped into that intuition of like, you know what? This argument does not need my time. I cannot convince this person anymore. if this is the narrative that they want to run with, I'm going to let them. Because at the end of the day, I know what happened. Other people know what happened. This is the only person in the situation that has a cloud of judgment of what went down.
Yeah. And it's hard too, because I have a friend going through this right now with one of her friends, where often the reaction tends to be maniacal. It tends to be, let me go, like, burn book, like, let me set fire to everything, ruin this person's image. And having to stop and say, there are people who are going to understand what actually happened, and those people are going to stay by my side. And there are people who are still infixed and entrapped in this person's drama, and understanding that you can't control that. You can't necessarily always control the narrative that they're going to spew, because, again, irrational people don't respond to rational responses.
Wait, but now that I'm thinking about it, when I said, you know, other people know what happened and know, that's also kind of a people pleasing behavior, because, like, it shouldn't matter to me what other people.
Yeah.
You know? And so I take that back.
We'll cut it. Keep it in, because everyone does that.
Yeah. And I think that's also, like, important in the context of this conversation is, like, you know, I think that it is one thing to be able to sit here and have a pinpointed conversation of examples and research, et cetera, et cetera. But there are ways that this shit sneaks up on us. Like, in that the exact moment right there, yeah.
Is that it's insidious. The whole point of it is that they become masters of this art. This is their whole life, is gaslighting and enforcing dominance. And so that's the other thing, too, is I did a lot of research in narcissism and friendships. Because I think it's a lot more common than people believe. And especially because, and I'm sure it's similar with relationships and even, like, in work too, the enticing side of a narcissist is so shiny. It's so bright, because part of being a narcissist is their inability to be alone. They can't be alone, because what they call it is the narcissist supply. The people around them exist to fill that supply. Their demand is high. They need other people's admiration, validation. Maybe they impose conflict to start making, you know, if everyone attacked this one girl, and now we're form a truce on this side, and now you're bonded with me. You're trauma bonded with me.
It's like an energy vampire.
Yes. So literally part of that too is they can't be alone. So they're forcing social events, always planning events, something's always going on. So there's an allure to that as a friend and as a girlfriend or whatever, because you're like, oh my gosh, I'm out and about and I'm seeing people and I'm hanging out with a whole bunch of people and they're planning everything for me. So I don't have to, you know, like, I just joined this friend group and now I'm suddenly socially high and mighty.
And social media makes it worse. You know, like, it's what's a kind of sad game that I've fallen trap into is, you know, some people will be like, yeah, I want to do this. And get everybody together and it'll, you know, be really great. You know, because a lot of my family, we live all over the country. And then what I realized was it was just kind of like a photo op for social media, where other people would think everything's fine and dandy. And that's a small trap too, because you understand that social media really is just the tip of an iceberg. It's not actually. But there's something so, like, violating about that. Mm-hmm. And it's been very freeing to just accept it, to not fight it, to just be like, sure, yep. So now, you know, I look at these events as a way to hang out with certain people, you know, change the theme a little bit. Doesn't necessarily need to be on paper, but just for myself. And it doesn't, every interaction with people like this doesn't need to be very powerful and poignant. That's the other thing. I felt like every time somebody would be nasty to me or say something, I had to like craft this Pulitzer Prize winning response.
And we all have the notes.
Yes.
Sharing with friends.
The screenshots, the tweet, then the separate group chat. No, wait, say this, not that. And that was equally draining because you're never going to get the response that you want. I mean, how often do even of like purely beautiful people, do you send something like that and you actually get a response that is 110% satisfying, right?
No.
So with these types of situations, it can be even worse. And so I used to do that. And then finally, I was like, this is a waste of my time and a waste of their time. It's a waste of everybody's time. Yeah. So I just,
and you get caught up in it and it almost turns into a new form of gaslighting where you're having to explain so much.
Yeah.
Just rational thinking.
Yeah. But also respecting the idea that like, you don't want to get on the phone with this person.
No.
You don't want to hear this person.
In front of them. You don't want to talk to them in person because most people pleasers, I know myself, I almost love texting when I'm having an argument because I can stop and think and mm-hmm. I don't have to see them. Because if I see them break, I can see in their eyes and I will immediately give up.
Yeah.
And at least with texting, I can sit
and
read it a couple times and craft my message so that what I'm saying is actually what I want to be saying and not just adding fuel to the fire.
Because
again, like I said, is a lot of times narcissists are just waiting for that response so that they can use a distraction from the original issue. Exactly what you were saying. They are always using self-defense first. And the reason they do self-defense first is because they're waiting for you to crack.
Mm-hmm.
They know you're going to, they're asserting their dominance. It's literally like a staring contest.
And the other thing is, it's like, I feel like with a lot of these behaviors, you can do everything by the book and exceed those actions. I have felt like I have done that in certain situations, and it will never be good enough. It literally, like, they will ask you, hey, can you please bake me a batch of chocolate chip cookies? And you bake two. And one has chocolate chip cookies, one has sprinkles, and it's tied up in a bow. And then they'll say, oh, this is great. Thank you so much. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And then act like it'll never happen. Then the next time they'll say, can you please bake me chocolate chip cookies and a cake? And you're like, what the hell? Okay, sure. I thought, you know, I already did the chocolate chip cookies, but I guess we need a cake too. And then all of a sudden you've got a messy fucking kitchen. You're in the hole from the grocery store. You're, you know, eating all this sugar and you're like, I don't feel good. This sucks. And it's just like, and then they keep asking for more. And so what I have found is there are certain keywords, and it doesn't have to be the same across the board, but for each of these kind of people that have these behaviors or tendencies in their lives or in my life, there are keywords that I have set for each person that once I read those or it comes up in conversation, we're done. Conversation's over. It doesn't need to be some big, like, fuck you, hang up. It's just a, oh, shoot, getting a work call, walking into the gym, which, like, lol, I don't go to the gym. It, you know, like, oh, I have dinner plans. We can pick this up later, and just shut it down. Because 9 times out of 10, in 3 or 4 days, they reach out to you like nothing ever happened.
Are any of these words like pretty general?
Would
some of them?
Yeah. One of them is wow. Literally wow.
And that's all they send?
And then, you know, paragraphs like wow. Yeah. Or, you know, disappointed. Just like little words. It doesn't need to be very vicious, like a fuck you or anything like that.
I swear those ones are more pinpointed.
Exactly.
Like if someone said fuck you to me, I'd be like, fuck you right back.
Exactly. Exactly.
But if someone said like that, like it's almost like the therapy, when people start using like the therapy words, I'm almost like, you know that you're in the wrong when people yes. start using therapy words. I'm like, when you have to go this deep,
yeah,
you already know you're in the wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just, it's just like a little guide that I set for myself, and kind of blending back to what we talked in part one. I do my burger salad. Is this a time that I want to get in the ring with this person? Do I have the energy to get in the ring and likely lose? Because even if you're in the ring and you've been training your entire life, they are a robot. It's an unequal fight. Sometimes I'll be like, yeah, let's fucking go. Let's go. Other times I'll just be like, hey, I'm walking into dinner with Steve. Can't talk right now. And it'll.
Well, and you need to know that person too of, is that what they're, I mean, I joke, like my parents used to always tell me this with like, you know, family members or cousins or my brother who edits this podcast, Zach, I love you. You're not a narcissist.
We'd be like, here's the real tea.
Yeah. Right. No, but like when we were growing up, you know, he was my older brother, like he wouldn't poke fun at me. That's life. And sometimes I'd scream and I'd cry and I would get so mad, or I'd like punch him back or something. And my parents at one point were like, don't you see that that's exactly what he wants? He yeah. thinks it's funny.
Yeah.
And this was, I'm talking about when we were like 8. Okay, so
the disclaimer to take over all the disclaimers of the episode yes. is when they were 5, 6, 7, 8.
Yes, and you're just classic siblings.
Yeah,
they're poking you, and they want you to be like, "I hate you," blah blah blah, blah. So they can be like, "That was embarrassing."
Yeah, yeah.
But this translates into later life in a more insidious manner. Of, I'm gonna keep doing. Crazy. I'm going to post something on social media to try to get your attention over and over and over again.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
Wait for you to take the bait. I'm going to tag you in a photo.
Yeah.
That you're not in.
Yeah.
Wait for you to take the bait. Because I want to start fighting so I can then say, oh, you're crazy.
Uh-huh.
When that was never the discussion.
Mm-hmm.
That was, it's now turned, it's to change it into a different discussion. It's to manipulate. It's to make you feel bad because they know that they can.
Which, like, is honestly the origin story of social media, I think, to begin with. So couple that with someone with these types of behaviors. And, you know, very honestly, you know, you and I aren't perfect. Maybe sometimes we use social media to do that too. I'll look, have fun.
Absolutely done that in a breakup.
Oh my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Again. It's funny too. One of the examples, actually from Call Her Daddy, there was a clinical psychologist on, and she was talking about this, and she was saying narcissists used to have to like go out and to get their narcissistic supply, and now it's so readily available for them. Mm-hmm. So you joke too, like even a narcissist who can never be alone will, if they do take like a self-care day, or if they do spend some time alone, they have to post about it.
Oh yeah.
So they're not actually alone.
Like the I'm taking a social media break.
And make it a big show. Not just don't post on social. I've gone many days without posting on social media or looking at social media, or like maybe I've specifically only looked at like dog videos. I'm not interacting with you.
Yeah.
You don't have to tell people.
Yeah.
And it's that performative act as a way to really manipulate and to really make it almost to always be flipping the switch and the script to make it seem like someone else's fault. Mm-hmm. And something I also read in a article about narcissists and friends is they, again, love bombing. They will constantly, with social media, they'll like comment on everything, you know, be the first person to like your stuff, mm-hmm. be the first person to comment. And it's done so in a way of, I approve of you.
Mm.
Not, I accept you for who you are, faults and all. Because when push comes to shove and faults show, they're the first to call them out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're the first to, you know, again, make this grand show to be like, I need to take a step back from you, blah, 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 blah. They're the first to do that. But when they're doing things that by transitive property make the narcissistic person look good, first to applaud them.
Yeah.
First, because it's not just, they want to be linked. They want to be linked to that person. If they post a really hot pic, they want everyone to know that they're connected. So it's all, when you think about like these narcissistic tendencies, it's all about the intention and the utility behind it.
Yeah.
Because they know how to put on these performative acts that look very, very genuine.
Mm-hmm.
And will say, I appreciate you so much. We'll say all of these things, but like when times are good.
You know what I'm curious too is like where the line is from kind of protecting yourself and like being, you know, putting yourself first and when that can get a little gray into some of these behaviors. And I mean, like not necessarily like very obvious in terms of like, fuck you, I did what I did because of you kind of behaviors, but in some of the ways where it's a little, becomes a little self-righteous.
I honestly do struggle with that.
Yeah.
Because.
Me too.
A lot of times I find myself wanting people to know that they hurt me.
Mm-hmm.
Or wanting people to know you made me hit the breaking point.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think as a kid and growing up and being a teen, I think the lines are blurred because truthfully, you just don't know. You don't have enough life experience. And I've done a lot
yeah.
of college that I, granted, the people were awful to me, but I didn't need to be so, you need to know that you hurt me.
Exactly.
So the lines are blurred. And I think, again, you have to constantly, it's like that intuition, circling it all the way back. It's that intuition of why, where will it get you if they know?
Yeah.
Because especially with a narcissist or especially with someone who hurt you, who may lack some of that empathy. I'm struggling with this even now with multiple different people in my life. Coming out and, you know, I always joke like, as like in psychology, and then I also joke as a Virgo, like I could probably emotionally destroy a lot of people if I really, really wanted to, if I really wanted to break down and get into those insecurities and really say it to them. But I don't, there's no reason to.
Yeah. Like what is that going to give you?
Exactly. And I think understanding that side of it and understanding, are you saying these things because you genuinely think it will help you with closure? It will help you process what's going on, or maybe they will actually listen and things can actually progress forward. That's positive. That's fine. But if it's just for spitefulness,
yeah.
just to hurt other people, Not to say that that never happens, because it'd be unreasonable to think we never ever do that. You have a crazy ex. I'm sure you said things that you're like, I want you to hurt like I'm hurting. That's fine. But it's that ability to then say, I was wrong.
And it's like, it goes and back to
that side.
What when the first piece of advice that my therapist, Letitia, who she's amazing, told me was, you need to get better at saying what you mean, but not saying it meanly.
Yes.
Because what I was doing was I was clogging my intention. Instead of being like, hey, I really need you for X, Y, Z, and I'm feeling abandoned and lost, you know, I was being nasty. I was being mean. And so it was clogging what I wanted that person to really hear and what my real wants and needs were.
And that's...
So I try to like, before I send any kind of text message or I'm on the phone, I'll say, I'm going to say what I mean. I'm not going to say it meanly.
And that's honestly, that's the crux of like the original question of what's the difference? Because a lot of these things, I do think, you know, we've done them now and then, or there, that doesn't make us a narcissist. That's not the case. It's what is the intention behind it? And is there ability for self-correction? And for a narcissist, there's no ability for self-correction. Mm-hmm. The other example that they often use is if you go to a party and you say something, we've all done this, and you go home and you're like, holy shit, and you overthink it and you overthink it and you overthink it. Are you overthinking it because you think that someone might be mad at you, that you feel bad, that you might hurt someone's feelings? Or is the only thing you're thinking about, if you're ruminating on it, is your image?
Ooh.
Is your image, and that's not, they must think I'm such a weirdo. Not that. It's, did that person, and again, they flip it on the other side. Did that person misinterpret what I said to make me sound meaner, like less smart, blah, 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 whatever. And again, it's that intention and it's that angle of it's still not their fault.
Yeah.
And it's not empathy, because most of the people that go home from a social event and freak out about things that are happening are thinking, did I offend someone? Did I make someone uncomfortable?
Oh yeah. Cause I'm, even before I stopped drinking, total overshare all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you just have to look at the intention behind it, because even in some of the things I've said with or read with narcissism and friendships, is like they'll overshare or become very, very intimate, or like make you feel basically like you cannot have anyone else. But the intention is to solidify them as absolutely necessary in your life. Everything they're doing is to maintain you as a supply to boost their ego.
Energy vampire.
Mm-hmm. So that's where I think it's easy to sometimes think about some of these things and think, and even doing the research, I'm like, holy shit, am I a narcissist?
No. I was going to say the same thing.
No. Because it's really about intention. It's really about, we've all done manipulative things. We've all done, like, you know, we've all
selfish things.
Done selfish things. It's not, it's about consistency and about, it's about context and it's about,
and I think it could also be about growth. It doesn't need to be like growth right away from the situation. Like, you know, I look back at previous relationships I've had and I haven't really like learned something from them or grown from them until maybe a year or two after. So
it usually
maybe
takes a while.
Yeah. I think maybe that might not be an official difference, but according to Not So Nice Girl Pod, parameters, maybe we're going to add one.
Well,
there's a growth from this type of thing. If you've done something selfish or manipulative or something that you're not feeling super proud of, instead of just like shoving it down, you know, and forgetting about it, recognizing it obviously is a difference too.
So, and that is what the research shows basically, is people who are not narcissistic are able to have that self-reflection, whether that takes a year, whether that takes 2 years, multiple years even. Sometimes it takes multiple years for them to have that self-reflection, and that's because things are going on. But the narcissist is never able. They're constantly being met with, like, having to face their issue because someone confronts them or something, and never learning from it. Whereas if you have in the past, like, just the fact that we can say, I've done something that I'm not proud of and it took me a year, but I realized it and I've, you know, grown and I've learned not to do that again. And but just the fact that we can say that shows we are not.
Yeah.
Because the narcissist can't. The narcissist is still going to defend and protect, and maybe they'll show empathy. That's when it comes to a lot of the performative empathy or the transactional empathy of like, okay, I'll say sorry if that means that you'll just start inviting me to your parties again.
Yeah.
So they do a lot of that, whereas we are able to actually introspectively look and say, I feel bad about that situation that happened, and now I'm not going to do that to someone else. Whereas the narcissist can't take that next step. They maybe will be like, oh, I'm not proud of what I did with that person, and now I'm going to deflect back at that person. They can't, they're still focused and tuned into that one situation.
Yeah.
So all of that being said, I think we kind of talked about a lot, and we talked about these, this narcissist tendencies, and I definitely want to dive more into this if like anyone has any questions about this, because I've done a lot of research on it. And it is a complex, there really isn't much of a treatment for these people. I think understanding and being cautious and being aware as people pleasers, as nice girls, as empathetic people, you are the target, and you often do attract these people in your life because you're willing to put up with it. And just like what you were saying, Sarah, I think it's just about, it's about understanding the situation, and it's not even about cutting them out completely and being like, F you, they may have a lot of good traits.
Yeah.
But making sure that you're still protecting yourself and not letting their insecurities or their, like, their tendencies or manipulation impact who you are and mitigate how you feel. If they're hurting you, they're still hurting you. It doesn't matter if they're insecure. And I think that's a big piece that I want to, that's a big closing thing that I want to share with people, that like, we're quick to make excuses for other people and it's not going to serve us.
Yeah. Definitely.
Anything else?
No, this is, you know, these are like mini therapy sessions for me and I really enjoy it. Maybe, you know, we should start our own podcast where you're just like my pseudo therapist.
I don't have the clinical training for that, but that is what, you know, that's the whole goal of the podcast for everyone listening, is to really just feel like you're part of this conversation and to, you know, maybe you do notice something that you're doing, and you, if you make even one change, or if I help you with even one situation in your life, it's so reciprocal too. I feel like I leave each of these feeling like I went through a therapy session and just understanding and that's why I do so much research for it, because I love doing the deep dive of understanding the people in my life, understanding myself more to just give you more tools. It's all about just understanding to give yourself mm-hmm. more tools, like what you were saying. You just mm-hmm. need to have the tools. Whether or not mm-hmm. you use them, that takes practice.
Yeah.
But you want to have the tools. But with that, we will close, and I will say thank you again to my lovely cousin, Sarah. And be sure to rate and review and follow on at Not Nice Girl Pod on both TikTok and on Instagram. I post lots of like mini TikToks and Instagram stuff too, of side things that maybe don't fit a full episode. We'll see. And if you have any ideas for future episodes, I would love to hear from you. So please DM me as well. And we'll talk to you later. Bye.